Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for dogs. As the headline in that venerated publication of truthiness, Mother Jones proclaimed, "Bad news for man's best friend, dogs are environmental villains." According to research published in the journal Pacific Conservation Biology, dogs are a menace to vulnerable species such as small birds. The insecticides in flea and tick medicine kill aquatic invertebrates when they wash into waterways. Dog urine kills grass. And of course, we know the fundamental problem of unscoopered poopers. And don't even get me started on the high carbon paw print. The CO2 emitted globally just in the production of dry pet food is twice as much as the entire United Kingdom, making Purina, Pedigree, Hill's Science Diet, and Iams, sometimes referred to as the Four Horsemen of the Dogpocalypse, equivalent to the 60th largest nation in the unnecessary production of globe-destroying gases. But people never consider these problems because they think dogs are just cute, cuddly face lickers that come with no ecological price tag. And of course, this doesn't include the barking, the biting, and the production of allergy-inflaming dander. But just from a climate salvation perspective, dogs are basically the Antichrist. Now, I know that some of you will reply that you adore your dogs or that they are good for your mental health and reduce your chronic low-grade anxiety. I understand. But do you forget the core lessons of our denomination? There is always a cost to virtue. As demonstrated by the pronouncements of the 23rd Biannual Symposium of the Frankfurt Council on the Continuous Eradication of Joy, the only way to know your own virtue is to constantly discover and master new ways of becoming miserable. This, of course, is just a rephrasing of the 15th corollary of the Ankenberg theorem. To be free, one must be good, and to be good, one must be miserable. Therefore, the key to freedom is misery. Or as Comrade Pinion stated it so eloquently, you shall know the unhappiness, and the unhappiness shall set you free. Well, nothing could make people more unhappy than getting rid of their dogs. So let's say goodbye to these polluting pets, these caustic canines, these malicious mutts, and advance into the glorious unhappiness of being progressive. Besides, as devoted 54th wave feminists, we always knew there had to be something deeply wrong with any animal whose branding slogan is man's best friend. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, the Blue Origin Six, those sultry intercontinental man-eating glamstronauts who spent a whopping 11 minutes on the edge of space this week, proving that with the purchase of enough shiny blue Lycra, anyone really can pretend to be an astronaut. That's right, Katy Perry, Lauren Sanchez, Gail King, Carrie Ann Flynn, Amanda Nguyen, and Aisha Bowe paid only Gaia knows how much money to play near space diva for the day in a planet-killing exercise of pure and incomprehensible waste. As bombshell influencer Emily Ratajkowski, TikTok's most acclaimed intellectual and philanthropist, commented afterwards,
"That space mission this morning, that's end time. Like, this is beyond parody."
That's bleeping end times beyond parody indeed. When supposed female leaders compromise everything they believe in just to experience a few minutes of waving daisies in front of their weightless bosoms, it really is a tragedy for the entire cause.
Saying that you care about Mother Earth and it's about Mother Earth and you're going up in a spaceship that is built and paid for by a company that's single-handedly destroying the planet.
If you really cared about our dear Gaia, you would never have driven this gas-spewing dagger into her heart. Just imagine how many poor people could have been fed bologna sandwiches with all the money that was literally lit on fire and thrown up into not quite space.
Look at the state of the world and think about how many resources went into putting these women into space. For what? For what? What was the marketing there? And then to try to make it like, I'm disgusted, literally, I'm disgusted.
And if you weren't sure whether MRAD alone could pronounce judgment on this wanton display of disregard for the future of our planet, she was joined by the dynamic and powerful duo of Olivia Munn and Olivia Wilde, both who condemned the flight as a waste of money at a time when people, quote, can't even afford eggs. Yes, why should anyone go into space when some people are having trouble buying food? Just as St. Harrison Bergeron taught us, since nobody should ever experience a better life than anyone else in any way, we must create the purest form of equality, the equality of squalor. In a system of equality based on the redistribution of poverty, we would no longer have rich, famous, beautiful women traveling frivolously into the sky while people back on the planet can barely afford eggs. Instead, under the ideal socialist utopia, no one would go into space, and everyone would still lack the money to purchase eggs. But we would all be the same, and the planet would live forever like a monument to the imposed equality of American anti-exceptionalism that we all stand for. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Finally, this week's Golden Tambourine with a single left-footed Birkenstock award goes to Molly Ringwald, the former star of every movie John Hughes actually made or wanted to make. At a 40th anniversary reunion event for The Breakfast Club at the C2E2 Pop Culture event in Chicago, Mademoiselle Molly laid out her reasons for regretting the existence of this mega-famous coming-of-age film set in the detention library of Shermer High School. Discussing the prospect of a remake, she said, "I personally don't believe in remaking that movie because I think this movie is very much of its time." She went on to explain that The Breakfast Club...
It's very white, this movie. You don't see a lot of different ethnicities. We don't talk about gender, none of that. And I feel like that really doesn't represent our world today. So I...
Talk about first-rate virtue analysis. So here we have a movie that pretends to be some representational tribute to the entirety of Generation X, when in reality, it excludes African Americans, Asians, Hispanics. Emilio Estevez is far too Caucasian to count as Latinx. The poor, the homeless, the illiterate, and the disabled, none of whom are represented in the movie. And even though we shouldn't have to say the obvious part out loud, not a single ambassador of the holy acronym string appeared in this film at all. Just a bunch of privileged, straight, middle-class white kids whose only experience of suffering is apparently a few hours being forced to sit in an air-conditioned building surrounded by a sea of books that some other kids their age wouldn't even have access to or be able to read. And then to top off all this heteronormative fraud of a class struggle story that most definitely has not aged well, the central defining characteristic of the two romantic plot lines is misogyny. As Ringwald said, "Judd Nelson's character John Bender, who essentially sexually harasses my character, never apologizes for any of it. Nevertheless, he gets the girl in the end?" Yes, Bender might pontificate about the imperfections of a universe in which door screws simply fall out, but he most certainly would not have survived the Me Too era. And don't forget Ally Sheedy, whose character can only snag the jock by losing her individual gothiness and getting a makeover into the cheerleader archetype by Claire, the queen of the plastics. What is the lesson to little girls? Change who you are to get a man, and when you do, maybe you'll be lucky enough to get one who insults you, degrades you, and looks up your skirt when he hides under your desk? No. Molly Ringwald is exactly right. And in making these stern observations about The Breakfast Club, she has officially passed the very first test of a true and approved celebrity, renouncing your own past work by applying the impossible standards of the present against it in a soul-crushing critique. It is very important for actresses to repudiate their prior work, since the essence of virtue revisionism is to judge the past by the standards of today and condemn even yourself in the past as proof that you are evolving to the current definition of virtue despite your shame and your unusual talent for applying lipstick entirely with your bosom. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.